The Land for Maine's Future program turns 30. In the past three decades, the Land for Maine's Future program has helped preserve more than 600,000 acres of Maine land in more than 150 locations. Each project involves partnerships with other organizations or agencies, and each must provide public access. Some of the projects are in well-known spots, such as Mount Kineo and Moosehead Lake. Others involve small land trusts or farms. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll learn more about the Land for Maine's Future program and the destinations it has helped create. We'll also discuss how it has changed over the years and what might be in the pipeline in the near future as another $4.3 million are released for the program. The Land for Maine's Future program next on Maine Calling. But first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. It has been 30 years since Land for Maine's Future was created. It was started in response to concerns over the loss of natural areas. Since then, the program has protected 600,000 acres of land from forest to farmland to stretches of waterfront. Today, we're going to discuss the evolution of the program and what may be next for Land for Maine's Future. In the studio with me, Kate Dempsey. She is State Director of the Nature Conservancy in Maine. Jeff Romano, Public Policy Coordinator for the Maine Coast Heritage Trust. And David Trahan, he is the Executive Director of the Sportsmen's Alliance of Maine. As always, we want to hear from you. Have you visited any of the places formed or protected through Land for Maine's Future? Do you have a favorite? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to all three of you. I got you indoors on this beautiful day. I know gorgeous. All three of you are outdoors people. But Kate, I'll start with you. And if you could take us back 30 years, why was Land for Maine's Future formed? Was there something happening? Was there a catalyst?
Sure. I think it's important for us to all to remember where we were as a state 30 years ago. Maine has massive forest ownership, mostly owned by a few landowners at the time. And in the mid-80s, we were going through a transition of that ownership. And so for the first time in probably about 100 years, land was being sold off. And so as a state, and the state government and the legislature began to say, how do we make sure some of our key iconic spots in the state remain available to the public forever? So Mount Kineo, Namakanta, which is southwest of Baxter, were places that people, as a community in the legislature, said we need to protect these as land is going through a transition. And I think even in the southern area of the state, more and more land was being bought up along the coast. It was being posted with lack
no
of access.
Trespassing,
no trespassing,
yeah.
Signs. And so it was a transition in the state. And so this grew up out of that context.
Okay. Jeff, how has it changed over the years? I understand about 12 years ago, or actually, why don't I turn to David? Were you in the legislature when they changed the Land for Maine Futures program to include farmland? And what was the thinking behind that?
Well, I think at the time we were seeing massive amounts of land, which was once, you know, productive farmland, being bought up by folks wanting to build houses, particularly from away. And there's a lot of pressure being put on that farmland. And in a way to preserve some of those farms, we changed the program. We changed the program to gain more access to the ocean for fishermen, lobstermen. We changed the program recently to invest in wildlife habitat, deer wintering areas, trout and salmon spawning areas. The Land for Maine's Future is unique in that it's always changing to meet the needs of Maine people. And as the decades go by, things change. And that's what that I think is unique to that program, is that it's ever-changing. I do really appreciate the way that that program is designed. It's one of the most transparent and accountable programs of state government.
And I'll turn to you, Jeff, for that. If you can explain the process, my understanding, and you can tell me if this is not right, is that for every dollar that will come from Land for Maine's Future, another dollar has to come from somewhere else, whether it's a local nature conservancy or a federal dollar. But everything has to be matched, and every project has to be in partnership.
That's correct. The requirement under the law is a one-to-one match. In practice, it's more like $2 or $3 for every dollar match. And the LMF program has been really great in terms of catalyzing activity on the local, regional, and state level, bringing organizations and communities and businesses and others together behind projects. And when LMF decides that a project is worthwhile and decides to make that investment, it brings other money from other places, and everything goes together from there.
Okay, we'll talk about the process, and any of you can answer this. I'm listening to this program. There's a very special place in my community I want to preserve. I listen to this program. I think, oh, Land for Maine's Future would be perfect. How does somebody start? How does a community get involved?
Well, why don't I jump in, and Jeff, you add. So most often, a local land trust, Maine has more land trusts per capita than any state in the nation. They're very active and very responsive to community needs. So approaching your local land trust is what we always recommend, because they have the skill set and the tools to begin to work with bringing other partners in, thinking about how to work with the town and how to work with state government.
Yeah, and a lot of times municipalities are part of the mix, and also the state Inland Fisheries and Wildlife and the Bureau of Parks and Lands are key partners in a number of these projects and have to sponsor every project that goes before the Land for Maine's Future program. And it's a competitive process. So there's a round later this year. And so if you get a sponsorship of one of those agencies that goes before a public board that's comprised of six public members and three commissioners that are appointed by the governor, and they review these projects. There's a transparent scoring process involved that's based on the statute and the bond language that Maine voters have approved, and all those projects are evaluated and ranked. And then this board will divvy up the money accordingly.
And that's some more of the basics, that the money for Land for Maine's Future is money that we have voted on as citizens in a bond process, in a referendum process. And then the applicants are scored. David, I understand that there's about $4.3 million coming available soon, but also that the scoring system is being changed a little bit. Can you talk about, do you know how the scoring system will change?
I know how we've changed it in the past. Our organization worked with the folks at this table to try to set some money aside to prioritize particularly delicate wildlife habitat, deer wintering areas, trout spawning habitat. The Cold Stream Project in the Forks is a good example. I believe it was 5,000 acres of deer wintering area that was purchased and protected by the state, miles of Cold Stream, and I think nine native trout ponds. Those unique projects, I think all of us support tailoring some of the money to protect those before they get developed. The other is, I think, access for fishermen. There are always all kinds of projects that come forward. One thing about LMF that, and I will have to just declare that I was one of the biggest critics of LMF when I first was elected to the legislature in the 90s. And that program, for all the concerns that were brought forward by people like me, they were all addressed. And that program, because it was so criticized in the beginning, was designed in my mind, and what I've seen and experienced, is that it's extremely well put together. It has addressed concerns of people on the left, people on the right, and people in the middle. So those changes have evolved throughout the program's history, and I think that's why it withstood the kind of political pressure it did in the last couple of years. And I think at the end of this cycle with this governor, maybe even strengthened the program.
Well, and you bring up the governor. When you served in the legislature, David, you served as a Republican. Do you still find that some of those that either you served with or people who politically agree with you still feel a resistance to just the idea of land conservation, taking land off the tax rolls?
No, I think history will show, if you go back, that the Republican Party had a very strong history in conservation. Many of the programs were started, Pittman Robertson and other programs were started by Republicans. I think conservation is the foundation of the Republican Party. So I think that was one reason why some of the governor's efforts were rejected almost unanimously by the legislature. I think folks maybe felt a little alliance to the governor, but up against the support, the general public support of that program backed away very quickly. But I think conservation is a sound component of the Republican Party.
It's interesting to me because all three of you represent very active, very influential organizations in the state of Maine. How often do you all work together like you do for Land for Maine's future projects?
Pretty constantly.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. We get along very well. We, Nature Conservancy and Sam, have worked together on culvert bonds to try to get fish passage. Anything that's related to the outdoors, we usually talk to each other and make sure that our organizations understand what kind of positions we're going to take at the State House.
Okay. You mentioned, go ahead.
I was just going to add one thing David was saying is I think a really key element that sometimes gets overlooked, and maybe some of the callers will have some great stories about their favorite places, but a key element is that every parcel is open to the public. And that's when we think about the scoring criteria, that is very highly considered by the board. And so what it's become is a place where everyone in Maine, wherever you are, has access to a place where they can go and recreate in whatever way is comfortable for them. So hunting or fishing, a quiet walk, wading in the water of the coast, jumping in a lake, it's available to you and not closed off.
Yeah, and these are 150 destinations all around the state. There are projects in every county that have all those attributes. And, you know, the funny thing about a lot of the critiques that have happened over the last 2 years, I know it comes from a lot from the administration. I'm not sure the governor's ever set foot on a Land for Maine's future property. You know, and I think if he did, he would see what Kate was explaining. And I was out this past weekend with my son hiking Crocker Mountain, and a site that was protected with LMF a few years ago. There were 20 cars in that parking lot. There were people all over that place representing all walks of life, tourists visiting the state, spending money in local establishments, and just people from all socioeconomic backgrounds that are enjoying these properties
and
all over the state.
And we should be clear, even though the governor expressed his concern with Land for Maine's future in the past, he has indeed released the bond money now.
That's correct.
Yes, we probably don't have to revisit that very ugly battle, but I would like to just say that Jeff just hit it out of the park. The reason that my organization is so supportive of Land for Maine's future is that two things. Nobody asks you what kind of income level you have when you gain access to Land for Maine's future property. Secondly, when my people go out on a lake, the people that can afford access to the lake, they have their camps on the lake. Oftentimes, the general public's only access to that lake is a boat launch that's been purchased or a beach that's been purchased. And that's the place where the average Maine person can go to have that same experience as the person who has the camp on the lake. I don't begrudge either of them. But everybody deserves to have a piece of that opportunity. Maine, why we live here is because of our unique environment around us, and every single person in the state who wants to should experience it.
Jeff, when you walked into the studio, you handed me a brochure for the Land for Maine's Future Passport Program. I've also posted a story that Susan Sharon did on the Maine Calling Facebook page. Tell me about the Passport Program.
So the Passport Program was put together by supporters of the Land for Maine's Future Program this year to celebrate the 30th anniversary of the program. And it highlights 35 destinations around the state and various activities that people can do, from nature trails, hikes, fishing, picnic areas, canoeing and kayaking, and so forth. And it also includes a wild card category that people can adapt this passport however they want. They go to our website, landformainsfuture.org. They can find information about the other sites in addition to the 35. And for anyone who visits at least three of these sites, uploads a picture to the website, they get rewarded with an LMF Works For Me flashlight carabiner that they can carry with them wherever they go.
Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, or post to our Facebook page. Okay, now I'm asking the hard question. Kate, what's your favorite LMF site?
Oh, it's like picking a favorite child. Come on.
Well, you're on the spot.
I live in downtown Bath, and I actually used to live in the woods, so I do miss living in the woods and love now living in a town. And so I can walk down the road to Thornhead in Bath, which Kennebec Estuary Land Trust owns, and in my children and through their school day go out to the Thornhead Preserve and can take part in the preserve and learning. So I love that place because it's so community centered.
Okay, David, your turn.
Yeah, Cold Stream by far. I have a camp on Lower Enchanted Stream, and the Cold Stream project is just to the north of where my camp is. And I've hunted on the property. I've fished on the property. I was with a friend. I'll share this experience real quickly. We pulled up into a Cold Stream access site, and there was a little pool. And I said to my buddy, I said, do you think I can use my fly rod to catch a trout right there? And he said, well, I'll bet you lunch on it. So I went down first cast. I landed a brook trout. For me, that's my favorite spot.
First cast brook trout. I think there would be other people who would agree with you. Okay, your turn, Jeff.
Yeah, I guess I go to one of the more classic ones. Mount Kineo is probably the top destination for me. I'm most at peace when I'm on top of a mountain. And when you hike to the summit of Mount Kineo and stand on the top of that fire tower and just see mountains and lakes and Maine beauty in all directions, it's just spectacular.
Now, is all of Mount Kineo preserved?
The mountain itself is about 800-acre state park now that was protected with Land for Maine's future funding in the 1990s.
In the 1990s. Do you know what its fate would have been if not for this project?
I believe there was some development pressure up there and the thought of carving up for second homes.
Okay. And for those who don't know, Mount Kineo is in the middle of Moosehead Lake on an island. It's unbelievable if you haven't been there. We are going to take a break. When we come back, your comments and questions, stay with us.
You make Maine calling possible, as do Evergreen Home Performance, offering energy-efficient windows and insulation to help homeowners achieve year-round comfort. More at evergreenyourhome.com. And Bohan Mathers, committed to helping Maine entrepreneurs secure their patents and trademarks. Learn more at bohanmathers.com. This September, Maine Public will be airing The Vietnam War, the new Ken Burns 18-hour documentary. We're planning a series of partial pre-screenings across Maine, and in preparation for these events, we're looking for Vietnam veterans or anyone who is affected by the conflict and is willing to share their own story on the Vietnam War. We'll archive these submissions on our website, and a few will be recorded for broadcast. If you're interested or know someone who is, send your testimonials and stories to mystory@mainepublic.org. And thanks. Coming up tonight at 8 o'clock on Maine Public Television, Wild Alaska Live. Watch live as this special takes us to Alaska to visit black bears, beavers, eagles, and more. We'll go deep into the heart of the frozen Mendenhall Glacier to explore its hidden ice caves. That's coming up tonight at 8 o'clock on Maine Public Television.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Land for Maine's Future, where it's been and where it's headed. With me in the studio, Jeff Romano, who is Public Policy Coordinator for the Maine Coast Heritage Trust. David Trahan is Executive Director of the Sportsmen's Alliance of Maine. And Kate Dempsey is State Director of the Nature Conservancy in Maine. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email, please, to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Jeff, how many bonds have we had? How much money has been raised? How much money has gone to help preserve these 150 sites?
So starting in 1987, the first bond was a $35 million bond. That was the first of six bonds. So we had another one, a $50 million bond in 1999, $12 million bond in 2005, $20 million bond in 2007, and $10 million bond in 2010, and then most recently a $5 million bond in 2012.
And they've all passed?
They've all passed with at least 59%. Most often it's 65% of the voters.
And Kate, you say this is the trend nationwide.
Yeah, one of the things that's really, really remarkable to me and just heartening is that these kind of bonds around the country unite people. In the last election, 2016 election, there were 25 similar bonds around the country. Of those, 23 passed, and again, by an overwhelming majority like we see in Maine. So one thing we know for sure is programs that reflect the needs of a place, of a state, unite people as opposed to divide us. And I think that's why your question earlier about why we work so closely together is this is a unifier.
But there aren't any bonds in the pipeline now, David. What is the future of this program and other programs like it?
Well, I can't speak for the other organizations at the table, but I believe you will see in the next administration a very significant bond come forward to replenish this program. I think it has to. My experience over the last 20 years is that over the last 5 years in particular, land conservation, or I should say policy for land conservation in our state, has really been a rudderless ship. There is no real policy now that the Land for Maine's Future program sort of been put on hold. There's many reasons for that. I don't need to revisit them, but we really need, I think, a clearer direction from the next administration on what their policy is, what they believe is the vision for the state of Maine. And I think if we get that, then people will unify again around this program, and you'll see it get right back on track, get replenished with funds, and we'll move on. One thing that concerns me, I'm a lifelong logger. I've been in that business for a long time. That is losing mills. It's losing, you know, paper-making machines. I believe in the near future there's going to be some land coming on the market, and that land now is open to the general public. And if you don't have a Land for Maine's Future program, who's going to step in and put forward the interests of the average Maine person?
Kate?
I think one thing that David points to that often gets overlooked is so much of the land that's in conservation is actually working forest land. It's supporting Maine people and our natural resource economy. Because we have a forest industry that has been able to function for all these years, we have that mass of 17 million acres of forest land in Maine. As an organization that represents ecology, that's really important, but it's also really vitally important for our rural communities. And so I would imagine, not making any predictions, but building off what David said, if you have someone in the administration who's thinking about the future of our forest economy, how do we ensure that those forests are there 50 years from now for a variety of uses? That may be a place that LMF could play a role. What's, you know, investing in forest economy in a different way?
And the beauty of the Land for Maine's Future program is it's really responsive to the local needs and community needs. And as Kate referenced earlier, there are over 80 land trusts in the state of Maine. So I know Maine Coast Heritage Trust is in conversation with those land trusts all around the state. And we intend to have a conversation over the next 2 years about the future conservation needs in Maine. And we hope LMF will continue to play a part in conservation of the state of Maine. And again, the solutions will be different for different communities. It'll be a forest-based solution for northern Maine. But for other communities, suburban communities, coastal communities, access to the water, access for public places for people to walk and take their families on nature walks and so forth, every community will be a different need. And that's the beauty of LMF, is that it's really responsive. It's really a bottoms-up program of communities, land trusts, municipalities working together and putting projects together that meet the needs of the communities and the regions.
We'll go to Steve, who's calling from Durham. Hi, Steve. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you for taking my phone call. I am farming because of LMF. We conserved 70 acres here in Durham, the first agricultural easement in Durham, back in 2008. I can't say enough about the staff, the program. It was as far as I know, I'm still the fastest to go through the program in 18 months, which is quick, believe it or not.
So, Steve, I'm so glad you called. Explain to me why a program like this is helpful to farmers.
Well, for us, or for me personally, we had our eye on the 70 acres, and what it allowed us to do was with creating a business plan to be able to purchase the farmland, put it into a conservation easement so it will stay in agricultural for perpetuity, So whether my children wish to take it on or not, there will be farmland in Durham to feed our community. So it allowed us to actually be able to afford to farm.
And in Durham, this is a community that would have development pressure, and this land may have been developed into house lots if not for this easement. I'm guessing. Is that right?
Oh, very, very much so. It was being eyed by several developers. There was a total of 17 or 18 house lots on that 70 acres that could go in because of the amount of road frontage. So,
yeah, that's Durham's a wonderful community because of it being such a farming hub now. And what you see is places where there were farms are farms. That's obviously very good place to develop quickly. And so what Steve's talking about is a wonderful, wonderful story of, you know, someone who has a vision for his family's future and being able to use this program to fulfill it.
And that's one of 40 farms that have been conserved with Land for Maine's Future dollars in the last 30 years.
Steve, before I let you go, what's the name of your farm and what kind of farm is it?
So we are called Okra Ranch. And we graze grass-fed beef, and then we do pastured pork, and then we also do pastured poultry. That's where I'm actually on my way to the post office right now to pick up another 200 baby chicks.
Oh, I wish I were with you. What a sight.
Yeah, no, it's a hoot. And you know, like I said, I just can't say enough about LMF. And then the other one is the Agricultural Marketing Loan Fund through FAME. Is the reason we have the mortgage that we do. So the state in general, like, made this whole thing possible. So
Steve, thanks so much for calling in to Maine Calling today. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Maria posted on Facebook, my favorite LMF property, while there are many, is the, she wrote Cuter, but I think she meant Cutler Coast, Bold Coast, breathtakingly beautiful. I will agree with that. I've been there.
The Cutler Coast is a spectacular place that was, again, conserved in the 90s with LMF dollars. You could do a beautiful 10-mile hike, 6-mile hike, either two options there, and just spectacular views from 100-foot cliffs on the shores of the Bold Coast. It's breathtaking.
An email from Brian. This may be an obvious point, but it's an important one. LMF is a broadly supported program. To be funded, it needs a 2/3 vote of the legislature and a statewide majority vote. Because of that, many, if not all of our bipartisan collective public values are baked into the program and thus into every project, even if LMF only puts a small amount of the money of the overall funding. So for a relatively small amount of money, Mainers get input into these projects. Without LMF funding, conservation projects are more likely to be designed according to the interests of the landowner, land trust, or private donors who take the place of LMF funding. The LMF program gives the state and public a seat at the table for these conservation projects. And that was your point exactly, right, David?
Absolutely. Whoever that person was needs to be hired by LMF because they'd be a great spokesperson. The thing that I guess for me, I grew up in a poor family, loved by both parents. They worked really hard to raise 5 kids. We couldn't afford a piece of property, and we always during our lives have used other people's property, and we still do. But there are people who don't have that unique opportunity. They don't have a farm in the family. They don't have land in the family. I want them to experience the beautiful things that the experiences, the wildlife that exist on lands. And sometimes the only way you can do that is through public lands. And the way this program is designed, everyone gets that same opportunity. And so, you know, I think most Maine people feel the same way. And that's why that program gets such broad support every time it gets on the ballot.
We'll go to Chris calling from Dover Foxcroft. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Yes, I wanted to talk a little bit about the benefit to our rural economies. Mount Kineo, by the way, is my favorite hike, although I am also partial to the Piney Knoll, which was an Orono Land Trust project. When you look at the Maine for Public Lands effort and you look at the investment in conservation and preservation, too often people kind of drive the conversation toward not being able to access land, not being used for the traditional sources of income, such as logging and Maine wood products and such. but they do turn around and they drive visitations into our communities. So like Mount Kineo, for example, people are growing up and they're hiking this beautiful mountain where you have a gorgeous view of Moosehead Lake and all of the surrounding areas, and they're staying overnight. They're eating in our restaurants. They are shopping in our stores. They're participating in efforts like the Pinnacle Pursuit, which is six mountaintops in the Moosehead Lake region. So, you know, too often, I think when people think of conservation and they think of preservation, they immediately go to taking the land out of its existing or historic usage. What they sometimes forget is that those new usages, the ability for folks to recreate on those properties, further grows our rural economy.
And I'm guessing that that's what this is. The Land for Maine's Future Passport Program is kind of all about, isn't it? Spreading the word, do a little marketing.
Exactly. And reminding people what's been conserved the last 30 years. I think, you know, in some respects, some people go to these properties, they don't even know LMF was behind them. But this passport will remind them of that, but also to introduce them to properties they've never even heard of, because that's what this is all about. It's making sure people have access to the outdoors and know the places that are available for them to enjoy.
I'd like to jump in here because I've given a lot of thought to how my membership might learn more about LMF. And one of the things that I keep coming back around to is it's up to organizations like mine to educate our membership. I represent sportsmen and women from all over the state. I survey them every year. Many of them, they hike, they birdwatch. They don't just hunt and fish. They do a number of things. And what I'm kind of looking at, I did, in preparation for the show, look at the very long list of projects. There's a very small percentage of my membership know about those projects. So it's my job as the executive director, Sam, to educate my members on where those sites are, what recreational opportunities exist there. I think the state could do a better job with that, too. I'd love to see at least a small portion of the money going into signage, on you know, websites, more links to these lands, more descriptions about them, their access sites. There's so much we could do. I think there could be some small improvements with the program. It's up to us, too, to as organizations, to educate the public where these sites are.
Kate's nodding.
Well, yes, and there is a great website now, but I couldn't agree with David more. And the other piece, just to build upon Chris and Steve a little bit, is that we think about conservation and we've often thought about locking it away. And what this does allow is Maine's diversity of lands to remain in those places. So Steve talked about farmland in Durham. Traditional farming community. We now have working waterfront funds. York Harbor was the first one. We can imagine in York there's big pressure for the development of those piers. And the York Land Trust and Mount A to the Sea stepped in really early, really innovative folks, and said, we want to preserve this pier so that fishermen can continue to fish in York and have it as a home. So what's really cool about the program and its evolution is that kind of adjustment to making sure that Maine's variety of landscapes and natural resource uses have remained. And I think that's about the conversation for the future. Other states like Vermont and New Hampshire have a joint program with downtown housing and thinking about how do we have thriving downtowns. Conservation and downtown's thriving go hand in hand, much like Chris was speaking about up in the Moosehead-Greenville region.
A couple emails here. One from Jim. He likes Howard Hill in Augusta, right beside this state house. Aerial views of the Capitol grounds and the Kennebec River. And an email from John. I grew up in Casco and have been going to Hackers Hill from a young age, which in my opinion boasts one of the best views in the lake region. I was happy when this land was obtained by a land trust, and I'm happy it's now open to the general public. Land trusts are a vital part of communities, and I hope any families looking to get rid of beautiful land look at partnering with a land trust. Is Hackers Hill LMF project?
It is an LMF, yeah. It's owned by Loon Echo Land Trust, and it does have a spectacular view of Mount Washington in the lakes region of Maine.
All right. Well, we do have to take another break. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. We'd love to have you call and tell us about your favorite place to go, especially if Land for Maine's Future was involved in preserving it, and maybe if you have a story about that piece of property. Again, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling.
Many businesses and organizations in and around Maine join listeners in supporting various public radio programs on Maine Public Radio. You hear them mentioned every day. To learn how your business can benefit from supporting Maine Public Radio and Classical, Maine Public Television, or MainePublic.org, visit our website, MainePublic.org. Click on About and then Business Support. Or you can just call us, 800-884-1717. Ask for Susan Tran. And of course, thank you for your support of public broadcasting here in Maine. And coming up in 20 minutes in our Public Affairs Hour, we have Commonwealth Club of California welcoming chess champion Garry Kasparov, defeated in 1997 by the IBM supercomputer Deep Blue. Now he has come to see how humans and machines can partner to achieve results neither can attain alone. Again, that's coming up in our 2 o'clock Public Affairs Hour here on Maine Public Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, 30 years of Land for Maine's Future. Joining me today, David Trahan with the Sportsmen's Alliance of Maine, Kate Dempsey with the Nature Conservancy in Maine, and Jeff Romano with the Maine Coast Heritage Trust. Join our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. A tweet from Timothy: my favorite LMF-funded preserve is Whaleboat Island, owned by Maine Coast Heritage Trust. I camp there every year with my son and treasure it. Want to tell us about, Jeff, want to tell us about Whaleboat Island?
Yeah, it's located in Harpswell. It's actually the largest undeveloped island in Casco Bay. It's got this beautiful meadow in the middle of the island. It's kind of a long, narrow island with forests on either end in this meadow right in the middle. It's a beautiful island to explore, particularly along the coastline. And during spring and fall migration, it's a great place to spot birds.
Okay. And you can get there by boat only?
By boat or, yeah, kayak or boat, yes.
Okay. We'll go to Kipsy calling from Portland. Hi, Kipsy. Go ahead.
It's Kipsy with a T, not a P.
Oh, sorry about that. Go ahead.
The reason I'm calling is because while I applaud everything that I have heard, I'm thrilled about what's happening to try and protect the land. But what I have been missing is the larger context of the Wabanaki, who were here and who never owned land, but were in relationship to it. And I remember when I came to summers, now I live here year-round for 32 years, but I used to come in summers, and at one point decades ago, there was a big suit on the part of, I think, the Wabanaki, and if they'd won, they would have reclaimed, I don't know, three-quarters of the state of Maine. So I just would like people to honor that past and that relationship and incorporate it somehow into the good work that they are doing.
I would thank you for that comment. One of the great, among the many accomplishments of the Penobscot River Restoration Project that was led by the Penobscot Indian Nation and my friend John Banks and some of his colleagues, is that actually LMF worked to support some water access sites for that along that river. And to the point the caller makes, I think it is an important question for us as a state to think about the ownership of the land and how do we, as a state, begin to make sure that that heritage of the last 10,000 years of the Wabanaki tribes can be honored. And, you know, again, the wonderful thing about the program is that it is open to all people. And as you said, David, that is for all of us. I think the most essential element is that we are making sure that land is for everyone.
Kitsy, thank you.
Can I just ask how much outreach you've done to the Wabanaki?
Well, that's a longer conversation. There has been each of us have our own individual partnerships as organizations, and it's a great conversation, I think, for another time. I'd love to have the Wabanaki representatives of the tribes on the call.
Thank you, Kitsy. We're going to go to Newcastle and Art. Hi, Art. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm all in favor of land trust. However, it has not been mentioned that the elephant in the room is that land is put into conservation is also removing it from the tax rolls of the municipalities.
Sure, Art. Thanks. And we did mention it briefly, but not in depth. I'll have Jeff respond to that.
Yeah, that's a common criticism that we hear. But actually, in reality, land trusts have conserved about 2.5 million acres of land in the state, and 95%, more than 95% of it is still on the tax rolls. So it's not just because land has been conserved by a land trust doesn't mean it's off the tax rolls.
Yeah, I'd like to just jump in here. Given what he just said, I think conserving lands creates jobs. It creates opportunities in communities that might not exist if we rely particularly on just one segment of the economy, whether it's manufacturing, which I support 100%. Those lands bring people into communities. I travel all over the state. I hunt, I fish, I hike, I snowshoe. Without those unique areas to draw people, some areas of the state just will not see that kind of traffic. They need people to visit their communities. And conserving lands is a major component of some particularly rural communities' economies. And I think that that's an untouched area right now. I think we could do far more. It means consistency in the LMF program, and I do want to speak, if it's okay, about that a little bit. When landowners and others who bring forward projects enter into a relationship with the state, they need predictability, they need consistency, and they need to know that the money that is there will be there in the future. Some of these projects take years to develop, and what I think derailed the LMF program was this debate about withholding funds and all that stuff. It created inconsistency in that community, and whoever comes forward to run for governor, I hope that this is a major part of the policy discussion, particularly around conservation, is what is your vision for the state? If Maine people want to continue this program, it's important that we have that vision articulated in this next cycle.
Kate?
Well, it's funny. I was thinking back to this past winter. I was sitting in talking with Senator King, and we said, Senator, did you know that the 30th anniversary of LMF is coming up? And he said he was, I think, lobbying on the bill when it was first established in 87. And then, as you mentioned, he was governor at the second round. He said when he thinks back over his career, he thinks to the establishment of the Land for Maine Future program as one of the most important accomplishments he's had because of the legacy forever. And it just makes me think about having a vision, to David's point, of what do we want as a state? And some of the callers have reflected on that. What are some things that we want to think about for the future?
We'll go to Larry, who's calling from Bangor. Hi, Larry. Go ahead.
Hi. We've gone to Tunk Lake a couple times, and there's one of those public places there. But if you ask where it is, we've been told, well, that this is private property. You can't go there. Now, it's obviously marked as public accessible, and somehow people there ought to be ought to be scolded for trying to tell people they can't go there.
Okay, so this is kind of getting back to what you're talking about before. David, you said you'd like more signage and make it clear.
Yeah. One of the things about sportsmen is they're very reluctant to give away their favorite spots. And there can be conflicts that occur on both private and public lands. And I think good signage, making it clear to people in the community what's allowed there, it's public. Everyone can come there and use it for these types of activities. It clears up a lot of that confusion. And I do understand the caller's concerns. I do see it quite a bit in my job that people are kind of dueling over certain areas. But that's always going to be part of both public and private recreational use. And we just, as groups, we have to work through those problems. And we do. We do very good at it, actually.
Yeah, and I would encourage people, again, to visit the landformainsfuture.org website. There's information on Tunk Lake, which is part of the Nelpon Public Reserve land. And you can get access to a map of trails and boat access in that. That's a beautiful location in Hancock County. But that and another 150 destinations around the state.
Are most of these destinations, and thank you, Larry, for your call, most of these destinations in most GPS programs, if you tap in the state capital, your GPS is going to take you there. Is it the same thing with these great spots?
I think more and more you can find on Google Maps and places like that. You'll find those.
But if you're going to Namakanta, for example, and you're up, you know,
your GPS might not be working.
Milwaukee,
that's right. Yeah.
I would encourage you to get the directions and know where you're going. In that case, but
good point.
Yeah.
One last thing: the departments of government play a key part in informing the public on public lands and recreational opportunities. If your administration is committed to those types of things, then you will see more investment by those departments. I think we can do a lot more as a state. Inland Fisheries and Wildlife Department of Conservation, Bureau of Parks and Lands, all of those groups, I think, need to work together to educate the public. Like you said, GPS locations, everyone's using handheld phones now, and they're amazing computers that used to fill a room now are held in the palm of your hand. There's so much we can do with those. Just so happens that an individual has created a Maine fishing and hunting rule book that you can get an app for on your phone. It's amazing, but it's just new technology. Why can't we do something similar with LMF sites?
I want to ask about, you know, 600,000 acres has already been preserved or protected in the LMF program. How much more of a need is there?
That's a great question. And because of the work that all of our organizations do with the state and other resource agencies, we have a really good handle on, in terms of ecologically, where it's really important to make sure there's protection. And again, protection comes in a variety of slices, so forest easements, et cetera, et cetera. And to the point earlier, it is up to the community to decide what the community needs to look like and what's the mix of conservation and other uses. And that is really, I think, a question that communities need to have a significant voice in.
Yeah, and ultimately the voters of Maine will decide, and the support is still strongly there in favor of the program. And it's important to note that when LMF started in 1987, about 5% of Maine was publicly owned, which is a really low percentage compared to the other 50 states. Today, 7% is owned, and if you add land trust properties on there, it may be closer to 10%. That's still far less than our neighbors to the west. New Hampshire is over 20%.
Really?
Yeah, Vermont is more than 15%. And then you go out west, you're talking 50, 60% of those states are publicly owned. And Florida, which is a state that comes up a lot with this administration, 1 out of every 4 acres in Florida is publicly owned.
Interesting. So probably 7 to 10% of Maine land is publicly owned and has public access.
Publicly owned or has public access, yes. Yeah.
You talk about how, you know, we've talked about how these are grassroots projects. Communities come to Land for Maine's Future, whether they're partnering with their local land trust or with an organization like SAM or another organization. Is there a different way of looking at it, though? Is there a way of saying these are places that are our crown jewels and are not protected yet and we need to protect them? Or is that for another process?
Well, certainly organizations like the Nature Conservancy spends a lot of time thinking about that kind of question. What is the scale and important places for us as a community and as a state to protect? We look at things like how does nature need to change over time with climate change? Where are the corridors that need to be protected so that species, whether they're plants or animals, can move over time? And so we look at questions like that and then can begin to do a much better job of pinpointing and talking to our partners and saying, this looks like a great trout fishery right now. It might be something different later. Let's work together.
So maybe trying to be a catalyst for the process if something's not already.
That's correct.
Yeah, I do think there's another element to this. There are people in this country who can come to Maine and buy 1 million acres. They can then do whatever they want with it, including blocking it off for public access. You need, I think, an advocate at the table when lands do come on the market. The amount of property that comes on the market that is even available for LMF purchases, you know, you're competing against, you know, potentially billionaires and people who who might want to buy it and lock it up. So you have to have, in my opinion, you have to have the public at the table. You need the LMF program with funding at the table. When those unique opportunities do arise, at least you're at the table. And right now it feels like we're absent.
We have an email from Stefan. My favorite LMF project, Randall Orchards. Working farm conservation easement protects iconic apple orchard, 450 acres surrounded by mixed soft hardwood forest in southern Maine Farm Belt, now among fastest rate of housing development in Maine. Randall Orchards, is that in Standish?
I believe so. It's in the Sebago Lake area, yes. I think it's Standish.
Okay, great. And I think we have time to squeeze in one more call. Let me see here. And go ahead. If you could be quick, that would be great.
Yeah, not my specialty. But I had how much money over the years that they have gotten from matching grants, you know, from different things, particularly from the federal government. I'm worried. I heard some of those overheard comments from Susan Collins yesterday about she'd come out of a transportation meeting and she mentioned that the proposed budget allocations, everywhere that the word grant was in there, any of their documents, it had been, you know, like crossed out with a marker, you know, no matter what the situation was.
You're worried about the future of federal money being available as matching grants. Go ahead.
Yeah, federal dollars have been crucial. Programs like the Forest Legacy Program has been absolutely essential to keeping Maine's working forests as working forests. And as Jeff mentioned earlier, at least 2-1 for every, you know, overall for the program, we've had matching grants, both federal and local.
So you share Ann's concern about these?
Yeah, we have to work together to, and the delegation has been amazing at articulating the need for these federal dollars to keep Maine's forests as forests.
Ann, thanks for your call. We're almost out of time, but I know that, Jeff, you wanted to make sure and mention the website one more time.
Yes, I want to encourage, again, people to visit landformainsfuture.org. Get yourself a passport. It's a passport to fun this summer. Introduction to 35 LMF destinations all over the state. Get out there and visit them with your families and have a good time.
And it's a beautiful day today, beautiful evening tonight. Great time to start. Thank you all for being here.
Thanks,
Kate Dempsey,
Jennifer.
State Director of the Nature Conservancy in Maine. Jeff Romano, Public Policy Coordinator for the Maine Coast Heritage Trust. And David Trahan, Executive Director of the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine. Jonathan Woodward ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives, by visiting MaineCalling.net. Today's show will be rebroadcast tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, lawyer and civil rights advocate Mary Bonato joins me to talk about the ongoing fight for justice and equality for the LGBT community. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.